Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. In this series of podcasts, we have carefully selected recent articles included in the latest version of the OMA Obesity Algorithm, which is a comprehensive review of obesity medicine that can be found at obesitymedicine.org. We then discuss this new science with obesity experts. In this episode, OMA Chief Science Officer Dr. Harold Bays interviews Dr. Sarah Wells about determinants of weight loss maintenance. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leaders in obesity medicine.
Welcome. My name is Dr. Harold Bays, Medical Director and President of the Louisville Metabolic and Atherosclerosis Research Center, located in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to the Obesity Medicine Association podcast. This is where we take a look at some of the more sentinel articles in the latest version of the Obesity Medicine Association obesity algorithm. And then we discuss a particular article with an expert. And we are fortunate today to have with us Dr. Sarah Wells. Sarah, thank you for being here. And why don't you tell the folks who you are and what you do?
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Bays. I appreciate y'all inviting me on. I'm a South Carolina general practice physician. I'm a member of OMA, and I was a contributing author to the 2019 and 2020 editions of the Obesity Algorithm. And in 2019, I opened a direct pay style micro practice for lifestyle-based treatment of obesity. With all the interesting year that we had in 2020 and being married to another physician who's very busy, I transitioned my practice into a business that provides online general weight loss education and coaching through my podcast and my online course. And so that's my day-to-day, what I do day-to-day. And I'm certified by the International Board of Lifestyle Medicine. I'm also currently training for certification as a coach through the International Coach Federation, just to increase my skill set.
Okay. Well, super. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the article that you chose was by Varkavisser, which I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that name correct. This was published in 2019 in Obesity Review. And the article is entitled Determinants of Weight Loss Maintenance, a Systematic Review. And what these folks did is they looked at articles from 2006 to 2016. And they specifically looked at articles regarding adults with overweight and obesity who were undergoing weight loss without surgery or medication. And they found like over 8,000 articles, but only selected 67 according to their criteria. And based upon these 67 articles, they were able to find key determinants in weight loss maintenance. So Dr. Wells, I got to ask you, what determinants did they find that were positively predictive for weight loss maintenance?
Yes, well, and I chose this article on weight maintenance because obviously not only is this relevant for our patients and supporting them, but it's also a matter of personal interest to me. I'm maintaining a 90-pound or about a 35% weight loss myself, which I achieved through lifestyle changes, and I'm thankful I've been able to keep that off for close to 5 years. But I'm always, you know, given the sometimes in the past concerning statistics we see about weight loss maintenance, I'm always looking for some positive encouragement as to that this is possible to maintain long term. So in looking through this article, one thing I noticed, again, maybe before diving into the data on this more recent review article, I wanted to kind of briefly go back in time to touch on a couple of the findings from a previous major review article, which these authors reference, F. Hang and Rossner. This article was published back in 2005, and it covered the decade previous to that. A couple things I found interesting there, two determinants that they noted to be successful for weight loss maintainers were that those people ate what they called a healthy and low-fat diet, and that they ate at regular intervals and did not skip breakfast. And this I thought was interesting to look back on now, 16 years after that other review article, when there's been growing evidence and quite a number of people who have been successful with long-term maintenance on kind of a higher-fat, low-carb dietary pattern. And not only that, a lot of them have had dietary patterns of all types that have been specifically incorporating breakfast skipping into what's become kind of what we call the intermittent fasting type approach. So in fact, that topic of breakfast habits and their contribution to weight loss itself was mentioned in the myth section of the OA, the obesity algorithm. So I think some of our understanding about the impact of fats and the impact of the timing of meals on weight loss and maintenance has changed and shifted since 2005, specifically in those areas. So with a huge number of articles that they looked at in this more current review, looking at weight maintenance that has been published since 2005, it was definitely time for this new review article. And their articles covered the decade from 2006 to 2016. And the strong evidence factors they found, the determinants with strong evidence that they found to be predictive of weight loss maintenance in this more current review article, included some things that just don't necessarily surprise us maybe, but they included self-monitoring of weight, self-monitoring of eating, physical activity increase, portion control, you know, cutting unhealthy foods, reducing energy intake, increasing fruits and vegetables, and decreasing sugar-sweetened beverages. So those are not a huge surprise, maybe to most of us. But there were also some strong evidence of some psychological or cognitive determinants that seem to be predictive of weight loss maintenance that included what they call self-efficacy for exercise and self-efficacy for weight management. And so those are intriguing. And that seems to be a theme among the determinants, this term self-efficacy. And what that is it's the belief that someone has their own belief that they have the ability to successfully engage in the specific behavior. So that seems to be the most interesting aspect of those determinants that they discussed to me.
Well, look, I think what you said is absolutely correct. I think a lot of these are things we could have predicted. I think that through the increasing implementation of behavior modification, whether it be self-efficacy or self-monitoring or self-accountability or any of those types of things, I think one of the things we've learned is it's not a situation where we simply say diet and exercise, and then, you know, that's the last few words we say as the patient leaves the exam room. I mean, there's got to be more to it, and it can't be driven by the provider, and it can't be just simply envisioned by the patient. There got to be logs. There's got to be accountability. There's got to be recordings and those types of things. So I agree with you. I think a lot of these things you mentioned, I think we kind of already knew, maybe could already predict it, but were there any things that they found that were maybe surprising to you?
You know, some of the things that were surprising to me were the things they found to be non-significant for weight loss maintenance. And those actually were sort of reassuring for someone like myself who is maintaining a large amount of weight. And I think they'd be reassuring for our patients to hear. But there was consistent evidence that age, gender, and socioeconomic status were not significantly predictive of weight loss maintenance. So since those demographic determinants aren't changeable, it's reassuring for patients to hear that, that they're not going to be decisive factors, or they don't need to be decisive factors in whether an individual achieves that lasting success. And another one that I thought was interesting, which was a behavioral determinant that was also found to not be significantly predictive of long-term weight maintenance, was weight history. So this seems to be good news to me as well, because it doesn't seem to be more predictive that if there was a lot of weight loss quickly or if there was a little weight loss slowly, the specific speed and the amount just didn't seem to be predictive of weight maintenance success long-term. So neither path, if someone had a slow, bumpy course, or if they had a really quick, successful course of the weight loss, neither one of those needs to be some sort of recipe for regain, which we have sometimes been told, or patients have been told that in the past. So I think that's very reassuring.
Well, look, I think what you're describing is that all of our patients are individuals. And mm-hmm. That's the reason a patient-centered approach is so critical, because everybody responds differently. You know, in the obesity algorithm, particularly when we talk about anti-obesity drug therapy, the response that people have to drug therapy or even nutrition therapy, physical activity is just all over the place. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's difficult to predict how an individual is going to respond. We can predict groups pretty well, but not individuals. Not everything is going to work for everybody. So given this variance in individual responses, of the things you talk about, how do we implement that into a treatment plan?
Yes, I think that's definitely the question here. I think that the impact of self-efficacy cannot be dismissed. So kind of looking into how do we increase self-efficacy in our patients. In other words, how do we help them achieve the kind of confidence they need to understand themselves, understand their unique environment, and kind of predict the specific challenges that they'll face in their maintenance. And that seems to be, you know, that patient-centered approach, really teasing out, learning to ask questions and listen well to patients and understand and help them navigate and them kind of predict what challenges they will specifically place. And then help them create a strategy for when they seem to go off track. How do they get back on track, and how do they self-monitor for that getting off track? So setting up self-monitoring behaviors and habits, encouraging those to be continued, and then hold them accountable when they come for follow-up to what they have done, and work through with them what has worked and what hasn't worked, and readjust as needed. Because I think one of those other aspects to this is, as much as there are individual patients, they also go through individual life seasons. And what worked in one season of life, they might enter a new season, which carries a whole new list of difficulties and challenges that we can kind of help them navigate again and maybe set up a new maintenance plan in that time period instead of allowing anyone to fall off course.
Well, look, I think that's exactly right. Just as patients have individual responses and clinical trials and such to whatever intervention is implemented, so it is true in clinical practice that patients are going to have individual responses, and they have to be educated on how to implement patient-centered approaches that are going to work for them as individuals. And I think you correctly outlined those things, and I think this article helps us ascertain what are those types of determinants that may be applicable for an individual patient. So I think this has been very helpful. Thank you, Dr. Wells. Thank you very much. And thank you for listening. This has been the Obesity Medicine Association podcast.
Thank you, Drs. Bays and Wells. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. Loved the episode of Obesity, a Disease? Head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. The views expressed in this podcast episode are those of the show hosts and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please check back in soon for another episode of Obesity, a Disease.